Understand, you can chant, huh? Yeah. Ah, yes. 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 There is also the Hanyi Pinyin, so easy for you all to follow, huh? Pass me a copy, huh? Yeah, 给我一张, yeah, 一张. Yeah, I know. Okay, very good. Very good afternoon to all. Before we start, we will allow Sister Lee to conduct their usual type of puja. They will chant like that day. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Pho, three times. This is to pay homage to our original teacher, Sakya Moni Buddha. After that, we will pay homage to Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Namo Kuan Sing Pusa. Namo Kuan Sing Pusa. Again, three times. Then we will recite the Heart Sutta, because this is the sutta we are going to study. Okay? So after that, we will continue with our usual puja, our Theravada tradition, where we will start the salutation to the Buddha. We will chant Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Then we will continue with the three refuge and the five precepts. Okay. Cheng Hun, come, welcome. Join us. We haven't started yet. Okay, I will get Sister Lee to start. We pay homage, respect to the Buddha first three times, then she will lead us in the puja.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now start the Theravada Puja. We will recite Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa 3 times. Okay. The meaning is homage to thee, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened. This is to develop our faith in the Buddha. Then just now when you recite Namo Bhunsu Sijia Moni Pho, Namo Kwan Sing Bosa and the Heart Sutta. This is also to develop the very strong sadha, the faith. Then when you pay respect mindfully with the right understanding, when you have a lot of respect and gratitude through knowing how great and how special the Buddha and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva is, your heart is very, very different. It is full of sadha, faith, very composed. That's why the spiritual faculty can come to be. Okay, now we shall start the Theravada Puja, which will develop the same spiritual faculty too. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattva, Very good afternoon to all. Just relax yourself. Make yourself comfortable. Maintain some form of attention. Then we shall start. Okay, before I start, maybe I will make use of this opportunity to explain to you the significance of this puja. It is a very important exercise that you must do. Puja are like devotional practices. Some call it chanting and all those things. The aim of puja is like what the Buddha said. We need to train this mind. The only way for us to train this mind is to develop the spiritual faculty, the 5 spiritual or mental faculty that you need for your mind to develop the condition or ability to understand the Buddha Dharma, then to progress along the path of Dhamma. When you have the five spiritual faculty cultivated, the Buddha said, it will enable you to understand the Buddha Dharma very easily. Then it will enable you to develop the meditation very easily. Because this five spiritual faculty or mental faculty, as we have taught you all before, there is a board there. I think we need a chair to put it upright. Yeah. Otherwise you can't see. You see, the five spiritual faculty are Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. These are in Pali. The English equivalent is what they call confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. That is the first spiritual faculty. That's why when you pay respect with the right understanding, you compose your mind, you develop the very strong faith in the Buddha and his teaching through knowing how special the Buddha is, how wonderful the Buddha is. He is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. So when you have that faith, your mind becomes very composed, very calm. And that is the initial spiritual faculty or mental faculty that you need to enable you to understand things. It's just like the saying goes, when you are confident of yourself, half the battle is won. But if you don't have the confidence, if you are very, very doubtful, nothing much can be achieved. Especially people who are not confident in what they do. So spiritually, the Buddha also teach the same. You must develop this confidence in you. Then after that, you develop the confidence in his teaching and the Buddha by virtue of his uniqueness, his perfection, his great nine virtue. Then after that, when you have this understanding of how unique and how special the Buddha is, your heart open up. There is this energy within, they call it virya or a spiritual zeal that will drive you to develop the teaching, to cultivate the teaching, to understand the teaching. That's why sadha and virya, once it come, you will want to meditate. You will want to follow the advice of the Buddha. Then you become a true disciple of the Buddha. Means you heed his advice. You will avoid all evil, do good. Then you will train your mind to purify the mind, to meditate, to develop the wisdom. So that's how you cultivate the third spiritual faculty. The Buddha said to be heedful is the most important thing in life. If you are heedless, you are as if dead. The heedless are as if dead. Dhammapada verse 21. Whereas heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So when you understand the significance of Dhammapada verse 21, you will determine through your sadha and virya to cultivate and train the mind to have this heedfulness. Basically, heedfulness is to be ever mindful of the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And the Noble Eightfold Path actually is the essence of his meditation teaching. The essence of the Buddha's teaching are the Four Noble Truths, as I explained last Sunday. That was also how the Buddha Dharma connect to the Heart Sutta. You remember the first Noble Truth? The final summary. The Buddha summarized all of suffering as delusion that condition our grasping and clinging to the five aggregate of form and mind that condition suffering. So that final summary is very important in order to understand the Noble Truth of Dukkha, which is the first Noble Truth that the Buddha proclaimed. We need to understand what this five aggregate of form and mind are. Once we understand this, then only we can put to test what the Buddha has spoken, whether it's true or not. Through ignorance, we condition our mind to grasp and cling at it, believing that the five aggregate of form and mind is what you are, is real. then you arise what they call self-delusion, Sakkaya Ditthi, and that is the cause of all suffering. So this can be understood if you really cultivate your mind. So that's why the third spiritual faculty is Sati, mindfulness, leading to heedfulness. When you have Sada and Virya, you pay respect mindfully, you determine to meditate and train your mind, Sati will come, mindfulness will come. And this is a very important spiritual faculty. It is also the first of the seven factors of enlightenment, the Buddha said. There are seven factors of enlightenment, factors that will make you enlightened. The first one is Sati, the Buddha said. Without Sati, you are as if dead. Yeah. Without Sati, you are heedless. You are not heedful. So this is very important. Then the Buddha said, without this first factor of enlightenment, the second factor of enlightenment cannot come to be. The second factor of enlightenment is Dhamma Vichaya or Dhamma Investigation. Only Sati, mindfulness, the silent mind without thought, can allow you to investigate the Dhamma, the teaching, the truth, to see things as they are. So because of that, when mindfulness develops, investigation of Dhamma is possible. Then only there is a lot of joy. Because once you investigate into his teaching, what he proclaimed, there will be a lot of joy in your heart because you realize the Buddha is so wise. Everything that he teaches you is the truth because it stands up to investigation. So with that, it will increase your faith and virya tremendously. Then you will strive on with more diligence to actually cultivate this teaching. That's how your sati and mindfulness become more and more stable, more and more stable. Then from there, you develop what they call samadhi. When your mind has continuous mindfulness and very stable, the sati is very stable. It becomes collected. It becomes unwavering. And that is the state of mind that is in samadhi. Samadhi is the collected mind, unwavering mind. It's all on the whiteboard. Then after that, once you have this samadhi and sati, your mind will be very, very different. It will be silent, very stable and unwavering. Means at the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, think of something, or smell, taste, and tactilely feel something, you are unaffected. That's why the mind is unwavering. Means there is samadhi collected. Means you don't react anymore. When you don't react anymore, there is peace within. There is calmness within. The hindrance of mind doesn't arise. So this is a very important understanding. That when you have sati and samadhi, your mind is always silent, collected. It can see things as they are. That's why it can have direct knowledge and vision of the reality. You can awaken to truth. You can awaken to the reality of the moment. That's how enlightenment can happen without thought. You just understand. The mind just awakens to whatever that comes to it. It understands on its own. That's how you develop Panya, wisdom, the last spiritual faculty. All these five, once you have it, very easy to meditate. Then the hindrance of mind is gone. Okay? So this is how the puja can help you develop this great spiritual faculty. So do not underestimate the puja. Apart from that, the Theravada one has more meaning. Because after that, the Buddha said, you chant the salutation to the Buddha. Homage to thee, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. In Pali, it is Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. So when you pay respect to the Samma Sambuddha, the fully enlightened one, if you do it with the right understanding, the strong faith and the virya, and the real mindfulness, the field of merit is immeasurable. Because the worthy one, they are worthy of respect. The four types of offering. Worthy of respect, worthy of offering, gift and hospitality. The field of merit is immeasurable. The Buddha already explained all this under the salutation to the Dhamma. So because of that, you now start to understand the puja is very meaningful. Then after that, you take refuge with the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. That's why we chant Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. The meaning is, I go for my refuge in the Buddha. Why do you take refuge with the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha? Why did the Buddha say it's the triple gem? You have to understand this. This is very important. Because you know what a precious stone is. Precious stones are very precious. But the most precious of all the precious stones are the gemstone, understand that? That's why the triple gem are the most precious of all the precious stones. That's why these are the triple gem, the gemstone of the universe. When you have affinity, when you are connected to these three, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, the teachings will be there. Enlightenment in the here and the now will be possible. That's why you must take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. And when you do that with your heart, sincerely, with understanding, when you recite, Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, means with your body and mind, you go to the Buddha for refuge. You really surrender your whole being to the Buddha for refuge. Because you know, the Buddha is a full enlightenment. Not only enlightened, perfect in enlightenment. He will have the teaching. And his teaching is so profound, so beautiful. That's why when you do that, you connect. Whenever there is a Buddha, Sammasambuddha, that arises, if you happen to take birth because of that refuge, you will connect. Then the second refuge is also very important. The Dhamma is his teaching, which is the noble truth. And this is also where the teaching is. So the Buddha said, if you chant the refuge, you will connect whenever there is this teaching of his. Any of his enlightened disciple, which is the third refuge you take, Aryan Sangha. The Aryan Sangha are the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So if you chant and take refuge in them, whenever you arise, you will connect because there is condition for you to connect through your refuge in them. So that's the reason why you take refuge. And that part a lot of people cannot understand. They thought it's just repeating what people repeat. No. If you understand and you take refuge, that's like every time you come as a living being, not necessarily a human being, wherever there is the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, there will be causes and conditions for you to connect because that is the refuge you take. And the Buddha under the Dhammapada was also explained, there is no other refuge safe in this universe except in the triple gem. Not even in the cave, mountain or anywhere. Because all those places you can't find the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha Dhamma. Then the third one is you renew your five precepts. Precepts are very important. The Buddha said, each and every one of us, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. Because of that, you need to pay very, very important attention to the law of karma. Because we are born of it, we inherit everything that karma creates. And every moment, every instant, we are conditioned and supported by it. Then our present life situation, we are what we are because of our karma. We cannot blame anything else. So if you know karma is so important, you must heedfully take care of karma. To do that, the Buddha has prescribed to you the five precepts minimum for lay people. If you keep to the five precepts, it will help you to avoid all evil. Avoid most of the evil. So when you can avoid most of the evil, you take care of your karma. Understand not? That's why you will not suffer. You will not entangle yourself into unnecessary karmic negativity that will condition your future suffering. So the five precepts is very important. Another aspect of the importance of the five precepts is when you keep to your precepts, you keep to your moral code, you have less problem, you have less karmic negativity and obstruction. And because of that, it is more conducive for you to meditate. Because a mind that don't have restlessness, born of fear, worry, anxiety, and karmic negativity, can easily develop the meditation. If you have a lot of this karmic negativity born of your what they call heedlessness in violating all these five precepts, you will not have a calm and peaceful mind. You will not have a good life. You will entangle yourself with a lot of mental hindrances, especially restlessness. So that is the basis of what the puja is. Then towards the end, we rejoice. Rejoicing through sadhu, sadhu, sadhu is actually one of the 10 meritorious actions. So that is the significance of the puja. Okay, with that, we can start our heart sutta. I will continue from where we stop. For the benefit of those who are not around or who missed our first lesson, I will actually read out to you some of the short notes that one of our sister has helped to compile. You all should thank Sister Lee. She actually very kind and very thoughtful. After she wrote on the board, she actually went back and compiled it. Then she sent it to me. I look at it. Then I say, it's very good. So what he has given you was an earlier edition. I add in a little bit to actually complete the short note, because there is a drawing that she draw the five aggregate. That drawing was missing from the note. So now I put it in words. So you turn to your this sheet. I will read to you now. So you take it as a revision for those who have attended before. Then for those who are new, you take this as an introduction for you. So I will just summarize. The heading is the first Heart Sutta class, come meditation class by Brother Teo at Wu Ping Ching Se. This was done last Sunday, 12 February 2012, 3-6. The first item is on definition. We have to get the definition right. Like I explained to you, the Heart Sutta is actually the Prajna Paramita Sutta. So Prajna is wisdom. You look further down. Prajna in Sanskrit. Whereas in Pali is Panya, means wisdom. Then Paramita, there is a definition from answer.com or www.answer.com, library and religion and spirituality. So the definition of Paramita here is Sanskrit, the meaning is crossover. So in Mahayana Buddhism, a perfection or a virtuous quality practiced by a bodhisattva in the course of his spiritual cultivation is called a paramita. So in Theravada tradition, the Buddha talked about the 10 paramitas to be a Sammasambuddha, the 10 perfection. For Mahayana, you emphasize on the 6. The 6 paramita, which the bodhisattva always take as their bodhisattva vow. Very important. You vow to perfect all this. I think you all call Liu Tu or what? I don't know the Mandarin word. 6 perfection, what you all call? The bodhisattva they cultivate. So this is the meaning of the sutta. The heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta. We are basing on the book by Master Xuan Hua. You have your book with you. The book title is The Heart of the Prajna Paramita Sutta. Verses without a stand. That one is from what they call Hui Ning, the Hui Ning's famous poem. Then his prose commentary by Master Xuan Hua. So this is the book that we are basing on. Then that day when I started, I summarized to you the four noble truths. Then I summarized the first noble truth, the final summary. Like what I explained just now. The Buddha said, in short, the final summary of the first noble truth of suffering or dukkha, I say, it is due to our delusion or ignorance that condition our grasping and clinging to this five aggregate of form and mind that result in our suffering. So you see, the Buddha also summarized it that way. And the Heart Sutta, actually, the main core teaching is the five aggregate of form and mind. Like the opening sutta, you all recite just now. When Kuan Yin Bodhisattva or Avalokitesvara, the Pali name, was cultivating the perfection of wisdom or Prajnaparamita, she illuminated the five aggregate. All of a sudden, she realized that they are all empty. That's why you all chant, Zhao Jian Wu Yun Jie Kong. So when you can understand perfectly the profound wisdom, then the five aggregate of form and mind becomes so clear that you realize they are all empty, non-self, empty. Of course, Sakyamuni teach under Theravada, he said, all of the five aggregate of form and mind, they are impermanent. The moment you grasp and cling, suffering comes to be. And because they are impermanent, they are conditioned arising, causal phenomena, they are not you. They are empty. That's why you have anatta, non-self, empty nature. So basically, it's the same. The Theravada normally emphasize a lot on non-self. But anatta is not non-self alone. Anatta is more than non-self. Actually, anatta is very beautiful. The other word is sunyata. Sunyata is emptiness. But anatta is encompassing sunyata and non-self. You see, the Buddha always used this word, rupang anicchang. Form is impermanent. Rupang is form. Rupang anicchang. Then vedana anicchang. Then he continued the other aggregate. Sanya, which is perception, is also impermanent anicchang. Then sankara anicchang. Then you have what they call consciousness, vinyanang anicchang. That's why in the Theravada tradition, the monk, every morning, they have to chant this, rupang anicchang. Then they follow by the second one, rupang anatta. So you have to ask yourself the question. The Buddha says form is impermanent. That one easy to understand. Then why did the Buddha say rupang anatta? Form is anatta. If anatta is non-self, then how can you explain rupang? Rupang is not a living thing, understand? That's why you must understand it's not only non-self. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that can you can hold on to it and grasp onto it. That's why it's empty. Because form is condition arising, causal phenomenon. When the condition is there, it manifests, it rises. When condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. That's why it comes and goes, it's impermanent. But because it's condition arising, it's only held on by causes and conditions. It's not an eternal nature, understand? Not? That's why it can come, it can go. And you cannot cling and hold on to it, say, this is I, this is mine, this can be mine. Impossible. So because of that, the Buddha is very clear. He said, everything is anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. Impermanent, suffering state, and non-self. When you understand these three universal characteristics of all phenomena, may it be your physical phenomena or your mental phenomena or nature's phenomena, they exhibit the same characteristic. These are the three very profound and important universal characteristics that the Buddha teach. So, anicca, dukkha, anatta, or impermanent, suffering state, and non-self, these are the three core teachings. That's why when you meditate, they call vipassana meditation, or insight meditation. We, the meaning, the Pali we, is the three universal characteristics. Patsana is insight into the three universal characteristics. When you insight into these three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self, your wisdom awakens. And because you awaken to that great wisdom, you can become enlightened. That's why they always talk about vipassana meditation leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. So that is a very important understanding. Now I will go on to introduce to you what I explain after that. After that, I try to focus on what they call the five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects, so that you can understand what these are. If you don't understand the five aggregate of form and mind, you cannot understand the Buddha's first noble truth, the final summary. And you also cannot understand the Heart Sutta, because the essence of the Heart Sutta is all about the five aggregates of form and mind. And the reason why it's so important is because this five aggregate of form and mind is what you are, the apparent you, the human being. You look at the notes. I put the introduction, short notes taken during the talk for sharing. This was done by Sister Lee. You all should rejoice. Sadhu to her three times. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There are two aspects to the five aggregate of form and mind. The first aspect is as a human being. As a human being or as a living being. You have a physical body, correct or not? So the rupa, the first aspect is as a physical body, or your physical form. Then you have a mind. The mind, the Buddha reclassified. There are four aggregates. You can subdivide them so that you can understand clearly what your mind is all about. Because seldom you see a teacher explain to you what this mind is all about. Even before you understand this five aggregate of form and mind, you may be a Buddhist for very long, but I can ask you one question. How much you know about your mind? Very few people understand what this mind is. So now, through this teaching, the Buddha explained it very clearly. He said the first aspect is as a human being, where you have a physical form, a physical body. Then you have a consciousness or a mind trapped inside. The mind is subdivided into four more aggregates. Underneath, I got explained. Rupa is the first aggregate of form. Then you have the mind with four more aggregates. If you want to understand what these four aggregates are of mind, then you ask yourself, what can your mind do? Then the meaning will come out. So the first aggregate is the Buddha called feeling, or in Pali is called Vedana. Your mind can feel hot or cold, it can feel. Any of your mental state within, it can also feel pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Then your meditation experiences, the pleasant or the happy state of mind, the good meditation that you have realized, the piti, the sukha, the pasati, the tranquility. Then the pain, the numbness, the restlessness mind, all these are all mental states, which is also part of feeling. Your mind can feel them all. So feeling is actually part of your mental state, which is part of sankhara, the third aggregate. Then after that, the Buddha said, you can come to know things. You can perceive what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And because of that, he said there's an aggregate of perception or sanya. Just like the Buddha image at the back, my voice, my vibration, how do you know them? You know the Buddha Rupang or the image through your seeing consciousness. You perceive them through your seeing consciousness. My voice, my vibration, you perceive them through your hearing consciousness. So this is how perception can allow you to perceive and recognize things. Under Master Xuan Hua's commentary, he used the word cognition. He never used the word perception. The Theravada tradition used the word perception. So this is the slight difference. Just make a note. Then the other one is the third aggregate of mind. What else can your mind do? Apart from feeling and perception, what can your mind do? Every day you use it. What can your mind do? You think a lot, isn't it? All of your mental activity or mental thinking, mental formation, your planning, your scheming, your mental intention, all this is part of the third aggregate of sankhara. That's why this word is very commonly used by the Buddha and a very important Pali word. The Buddha always summarizes it, sabbe sankhara anicchang, all sankhara, all of your mental activity, including your feeling and perception, is it? Or everything that your mind can do, which is sankhara, your planning, your scheming, your emotion, all these are sankhara, is it? They are all impermanent. They come and they go. That's why sabbe sankhara anicchang. Then the Buddha said, if you deludedly grasp and cling to what sankhara tell you, suffering will arise. That's why he says, sabbe sankhara dukkham. All of sankhara will lead to suffering if you don't have wisdom. If you grasp and cling onto it and hold on to it, give meaning to it. Then the last one is sabbe dhamma anatta. That one is, he don't only use sankhara, he use dhamma. So dhamma is complete. All of the conditioned and unconditioned are called dhamma. Everything is dhamma, the truth and the reality. So sankhara is the conditioned world within existential, whereas the unconditioned world, which include nibbana, supramundane and all things, are under dhamma. Whether it's conditioned or unconditioned, they are all anatta, empty, non-self. So do not gullibly cling and grasp onto the egoic mind, thinking that after you enlighten, you have become something. That's why in the Heart Sutta, finally, no attainment, no enlightenment, no birth, no death, no sickness, no old age and all those things. This is the profound wisdom when you have penetrated the Dhamma, means the unconditioned state, when you have gone beyond. That's why Master Xuan Hua put here, for those that I don't know, you got this page or not, it's behind here. I read to you. The Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta title combines both Dhamma and analogy. Prajnaparamita is the Dhamma that transcends the relative. Relative is the conditioned world, reaching a state of non-relativity or the unconditioned. This is the meaning, the Dhamma. Heart is the analogy. So when you understand the meaning, it will stand out and it will really, really transform you, make you completely different. It transforms you completely, character-wise, then personality-wise. You will no longer deludedly cling and grasp onto this form and mind, thinking that you are real, thinking that the form is you, the aggregate of mind that you come to experience, they are real and they are what you are. The feeling, the perception, the activity of mind, your views, your opinion, all of sankhara and the consciousness that you arise. That's why the Buddha gave the five equivalent analogy of this five aggregate of form and mind. And through that, it shows it to you clearly, their impermanent nature or universal characteristic. Then how when you grasp and cling, suffering comes to be. Then through understanding the impermanent nature, you will know that they are all anatta, all empty. So I will read on. The five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect, now you more or less know. Except the last one, the last aggregate of mind, I haven't explained. Your mind can still do one more thing. Apart from feeling, perception and thinking and arising all the emotion, what else can your mind do? Your mind can become conscious of what you see, conscious of what you hear, conscious of what you smell, you taste, you tactile feel and think. That is the power of the mind, to become conscious. So the Buddha called this last aggregate of mind as consciousness. With the eye, E-Y-E, you can see. You can arise seeing consciousness. You can become conscious of what you see. That is the aggregate of consciousness. With the ear, you can hear things. You can become conscious of what you hear. Hearing consciousness can come to be. So the Buddha explained this very clearly so that you can develop the understanding and the cultivation. Like I explained last Sunday, you put to test. The moment you grasp and hold on to any of these five aggregates of form and mind, suffering really arises. Take for example the first aggregate of this form, physical body. If you cling and grasp deludedly, thinking that it's you, what will happen to you? You will have fear, worry, and anxiety of what happened to this body. You will worry about it getting old, getting sick, and one day will die. Then there is this separation from your loved one because you think you exist, you think you are real. Then you will develop what they call the egoic mind, the personality, to try to own things and possess things. That's how selfishness come to be, the evil roots come to be. It makes you selfish, egoic. That's how you argue with people. That's how you become very unhappy when people say something bad about this physical body. And because you cling to the name they gave it to you, you think you are that name. So this is what the Buddha calls Sakkaya Ditti, self-delusion. When you grasp onto it deludedly, thinking that it's you, suffering comes to be. That's why this Heart Sutta is very important. Okay, we go on. Now we go to the second aspect. You look at the second aspect. Then the second aspect is the five aggregate as a five mental aggregate. Means every moment of sense door consciousness, means every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thinking consciousness. There is also the five aggregate of form and mind inside. That is what the second aspect is all about. And the Buddha explained it very clearly. He said, the mind has got four aggregate. Then how did the rupang, or the mental form, enters the mind? How come, he said, there is also the five aggregate? So if you were to check, one of the four aggregate of mind that the Buddha explained, perception, is the one that brings the external form or rupa into the mind. You have to understand, as a human being, we have a mind. The mind can know things. Okay? The thing that the mind know is the form in the mind. Understand that? Like the Buddha image at the back. It's an external form, isn't it? How do you come to know? You perceive it through your seeing consciousness. That external form enters the mind. Then there is this image here. That's how your mental formation catch it. Then your memory, through what you have been taught, conditioned to actually grasp onto it. The moment you grasp onto it, that mental image become real. Understand now? When people say something about the Buddha or do something to the image, you get angry, you get disturbed, you react. There is no equanimity, there is no understanding. That's how the Buddha said, everything that you come to perceive, you cling and grasp, suffering comes to be. So the second aspect is very important. This is what the Buddha called the five aggregate of form and mind, the mental five aggregate. And this is the one that he teach under the law of dependent origination, Paticca Samuppada, or the 12 link. In Mahayana, you all call it the Si Yin Yan Fa. This one explain to you clearly how your mind work, how you function as a human being. All the links are very clearly explained by the Buddha. The teachings are mainly in the Theravada tradition. I realize the Mahayana, they don't go into the foundation, the basic teaching. They go into the what they call the wisdom part. They only expound to you the wisdom part. Like they say, qi xing dong nian. When you arise the mind, it creates activity of mind. But you cannot understand how the link works because it's not really taught. They may explain to you, but no real what they call clarity of explanation of how your mind really functions and how to tie in with the five aggregate of form and mind to see clearly how you function as a human being. Okay, then we move on. Then we have what they call sankhara or mental formation. I put in bracket. Everything your mind can do, including feeling and perception. This is to let you know the importance of this word sankhara. The Buddha always refer to this word. In fact, everything that your mind can do is your content of consciousness. When you become conscious, the consciousness is like a receptacle. You know what is a receptacle? Like this cup. It holds on something. The content that it holds inside, that is sankhara. Everything that your mind can do, whatever that is inside that content, it is sankhara. So actually your five aggregate, the mental one, is only sankhara and vijnana, these two. But because it's expanded to include feeling and perception, that's why the five aggregate comes to be. Okay, then we go on. We talk about the five hindrance of mind. The five state that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. The Buddha call it sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, which is sleepiness or lethargic mind. Then you have restlessness and doubt. It's also on the whiteboard, the extreme, your left, extreme left. Five hindrances. These are the mental states that will arise in most living beings who are heedless, who have not trained their mind. And the Buddha called it mental hindrance because it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. That's why it's called a mental hindrance. Okay, this one later meditation, I may just run through it again. Then you have what they call the five spiritual faculty, which I already explained. Your faith, sadha, your virya, spiritual zeal, your sati or mindfulness, samadhi, a collectedness of mind and unwavering mind, then panya, wisdom. The five spiritual faculty you need to train, develop them through your puja and your meditation to counter the five hindrances. That's how you progress. That's how you become heedful. Then Sister Lee has actually wrote down some very important short notes. He said, reacting to sense experience. The moment you react to what you see, what you hear, what you think, these three doors are very powerful. Even what you taste and what you smell, and tactile feel. The moment you react, the first two hindrances of mind will arise. Sensual desire and ill will. And these are the first two of the three evil roots. And the reason why you react is there is delusion. That's why the three evil roots, they all simultaneously arise. So reacting to sense experience creates sensual desire and ill will, or what they call craving, positive and negative craving, leading to all your suffering. This is the second noble truth. When you deludedly grasp and cling on to what you see, what you hear, what you think, what you smell, what you taste and what you tactile feel. This delusion will condition your grasping. That's why positive and negative, sensual desire and evil, and suffering will arise. Then he said, meditation, like I explained. Meditation got two parts. First, the contemplative wisdom. You have to contemplate through the second turning of the Four Noble Truths. When you reflect, contemplate, and inquire into what the Buddha has taught you, wisdom will arise. But most of the time, it's not penetrative. You need to develop what they call the direct seeing. You have to train your mind in sati or mindfulness to see things as they are. Sati and samadhi, once they develop, you will have the direct seeing without thought. You see things as they are. That's how it leads to wisdom, awakening. Then the third one is grasping and clinging, conditioned suffering. Your grasping and clinging is born of your delusion, your ignorance. That's why you grasp and cling. And the moment you grasp and cling, especially deludedly to your five aggregate of form and mind, suffering will come to be. Then the Buddha said to develop the initial wisdom, he asked the monk to every day reflect and contemplate on these five daily reflection or contemplation. The Buddha said, this is to understand the Dhamma that it teaches you, the unreality of this form, physical body, the first aspect of the rupa. Don't cling and don't grab so that you can free. He said, this body of ours is of the nature to grow old and decay, for it has not gone beyond old age and decay. So if you confront this growing old, having problem with getting old, you know why? When you get old, what happens? You become very, very weak, very fragile, and have a lot of sickness and problem. Your senses fail you. So living being grasps and cling onto this body, what do you want? You want the body to be forever young, never get old, never get sick, and if possible, don't have to die. But this is against nature, because the physical body is only element. It goes the way of nature. It is of the nature to age, decay. So when you understand this and you reflect, this body is not me, it's only element. It goes the way of nature. Like every living being, as long as I live long enough, this form will grow old, it will deteriorate, because it's condition arising. When condition is no more there to support it, it will start to fail. Like a car you drive, after some years, you find that no matter how well you maintain and keep, it tend to have problem. Sometimes like car very easy, you can change the part, then you can get it run again. But the human body, you cannot change too many things. You can only change certain things. Maybe now science and technology, medical science has progressed a lot. Like Lee Hoon's mother also experienced that. He changed the lens, the eye. So beautiful. My father also did it. So beautiful. It's like new eye. It's so clear after they change. So nowadays, medical science help. But whatever it is, do not cling, do not grasp. So when you reflect and cling, you will suffer. But when you reflect and understand with wisdom, you don't have to suffer. Like the Buddha said, this is the reality of life and existence. Getting old, getting sick and die. Each and every living being has to go through it. You are not alone. Correct or not? So why do you lament? What's the difference between a person who suffers and a person who doesn't suffer? Based on the Four Noble Truths, you understand. The one who suffers deludedly cling and grabs onto this body, right? Thinking that it's theirs. That's why they worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. The one that has wisdom will reflect like what the Buddha said. This body of mine is only element, not me. Anatta. impermanent, it come and it go. Like an old car, time to condemn. Got money, buy a new car. Understand? No? How to have money to buy a new car if it's your body? You cannot change overnight. You know? Not like car. Got money, buy. This one, you will have to take birth. You cannot just change. Understand? No? Take birth means what? The Buddha say we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So when this one go, what happened? That car that come, the new car, not your decision, not your choice, unless you are a cultivator, understand not? Unless your karma very good, then you get a BMW, or a Mercedes, or very good car. Maybe a very reliable Japanese car. That some of this car can do a lot of things. Means it comes with wisdom. A lot of automation can sense a lot of things. So quite similar. But if you don't take care of your karma, you are so heedless, you know what type of car you will get. You will get an old junk. Every time give you problem. Understand? That if you got a lot of karmic negativity, this car come with a lot of imperfection. Understand? That's how you suffer. That's why law of karma very fair. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. It's very fair. You reap what you sow. So if you want people to be nice to you, friendly to you, you better learn to have goodness and virtue. Be nice to people and friendly to people. And maybe this analogy doesn't really wake you up. I give you another one. Not only to people. If you want your children to obey you, to be nice to you, to have filial piety towards you, or your in-law to have good in-laws. In-law doesn't mean mother-in-law alone. Daughter-in-law, son-in-law, they are all your in-laws. You must treat them well, understand? If you treat your children well, be responsible, allow them to have the understanding to live the noble life or the happy life. Means you have this wisdom to care for them, to love them, to protect them, to advise them. But do not pressure them or do anything negative to them. Because what you do to them karmically come back to you. You will have children that do the same thing to you. Because this is how you treat them. Understand? When you abuse your children, your in-law, you reap what you sow. In future you come. You have children that give you the same thing. Or you will have parents that treat you the same way as you treat your child. Then you have in-laws that will treat you the same you treat them. So if you have goodness, like what the Buddha said, avoid all evil, do good and purify the mind. Cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action and right livelihood. Then you are wholesome, you are beautiful, you are very virtuous, very kind, very polite, very wise. And because of that, you treat everybody so well, using your Dhamma, your wisdom. And karmically, when you come, you have very good parents who will care for you. You have very good children who will actually have a lot of filial piety towards you, who will appreciate what you have done. Then all your friends, your colleagues, your in-law, all they are beautiful. Well, this is how you treat them. So karma is like that. You have to reflect. So when you understand, that is the fifth reflection. The fifth reflection, I jump a bit, you go down. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So when you know this, when you have this right view, you must take care of your karma. How to take care of karma? Avoid all evil. How to avoid all evil? Keep your five precepts. Then how to have good karma? Do good. How to have wisdom? Purify your mind. These are the advice of the Buddha. So it's so easy when you understand. Then I read the fourth one. This fourth one is very important. The fourth one is all that is dear to us, like our loved ones, our wealth, our possession, etc. They are all impermanent and conditioned arising. Hence, they will separate from us one day. Do not be deluded by what you own. Understand not? Your loved one, your wealth, and all those things. You see, when you have wisdom, you know they arise because there is condition for them to arise. Like your child, your loved one, you give birth to them. You become the biological parent. Then your parent give birth to you. You become the biological children. That's it. Understand not? You can love them, respect them as much as you want to, but do not cling and hold on to them. Understand? They are like you. The form and mind not real, not what you are. The form go the way of nature. The moment you grasp and you cling, you suffer. They have their karma. Understand? That's why you only need to advise them as parents, as children. Teach them the right understanding, the right view, the right Dhamma, so that they can have the good life, so that in future when they come, they have this inheritance, the law of karma, that will support them, that bring forth the noble life, the happy life, and the good life. So when you understand, you do not grasp, you do not cling, because failing to understand this can give rise to a lot of suffering. Like I said, the Buddha always said, either you leave them before they leave you, or they will leave you before you die. You understand? Your loved one, all, they are also subject to birth, old age, sickness, and death, condition arising. So their form and mind can also disappear and go. When condition cease to be, they also go. Your wealth, your possession is the same. You make a wrong decision, a wrong call, it's gone. But if you know how to accumulate them through right understanding and right view, no negativity, then it will come to you through the nature's way. So these are all very, very easy to understand. But the thing that living beings don't understand is they hold on to all this, thinking that they will never die. You just reflect on this. The moment your breath stops, what happened? Your whole identity gone. Brother Theo, no more. Understand or not? Then, my loved one, my wealth, my possession, all this doesn't belong to me anymore. Understand or not? It goes the way of nature. Then, if you are lucky, it goes to your beneficiary, inheritance. That's why, either way, separation is a reality. When you understand this reality of life and existence, this is the first noble truth. Separation from loved ones and prized possession, the fifth condition, like divorce, death, then forced separation and all those things. When you understand through the five daily contemplation and reflection, you are actually preparing yourself to have the wisdom to confront this reality of life and existence. So that any time when you are hit, when you are confronted with it, you have the wisdom. You no longer lament like usual people. So this is to prepare you. Every day reflect. Money in the bank is not your money. You must know how to use it. Understand? There is a very, maybe people coin it, the Mandarin version. He said, if you are not careful, but it has this meaning. He said, if you believe you die already, you go to heaven, is that? So if you put your money in the bank, you don't know how to use for the benefit of yourself and your loved ones and the society and the universe or the planet or all beings. You know what happened? He said, after you die, because you believe you can be born in heaven, 人在天堂, 钱在银行. So you don't get to use it. Up there cannot come down and draw. So use it while you're still around. It will give rise to a lot of wholesomeness and goodness. But I'm not telling you to squander it or to one shot give away everything. No. Use it with understanding. wherever there is condition to use it, so that there is a lot of joy, so that your karmic nature is strongly enhanced. You don't need to bring everything along, because nothing can be brought along. Actually, whatever that you have, if you don't use, it becomes wasted. Understand? You cannot make use of it to develop merits, wholesomeness, goodness. You cannot relieve suffering. If you know how to use it for the well-being and happiness of all, this will be your inheritance. Understand? Karmically, you reap what you sow. Whatever you give, you will reap it back. That's why you look at Warren Buffett. You look at Bill Gates. Every life they come, they are so wealthy, because this life also they donate so much. They reap what they sow. So when you understand this, life becomes so simple. Okay? I will just finish off. Then we can start. Okay, the second and the third is linked to the first one. The second one is the reflection. It said, this body of ours is of the nature to be diseased and to get sick, for it has not gone beyond disease and sickness. Then this body of ours is of the nature to die, for it has not gone beyond death. So if you constantly reflect, inquire, and develop the wisdom by comparing it with the first noble truth, then you realize the Buddha is so wise. That's why he told the monk, the cultivator, every day you must reflect. Not only once a year. A lot of people once a year make resolution. This one, every day, so that you wake up. Understand? But you understand already with the wisdom, already, no need to do this. But initially, before this understanding stabilizes, if you feel that you can still be afflicted by what happened, you must reflect. Okay? Okay, we finish. That is a summary. So now we can start. There's an introduction. Okay, the heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta with verse without a stand and prose commentary. With commentary by Venerable Master Xuan Hua. Okay, you go to the content page. After the content page, introduction 1. Roman number 7. Okay, Roman number 7. Just give me a minute. I need to drink my throat. Okay, today is the first Heart Sutta proper. After the introduction, I took about 1.5 session, I think. We took almost 1 hour 15 minutes. Never mind, we still got 45 minutes. Okay, introduction 1. In uncountable ways, this is an extraordinary book. It is one of those records of wisdom which can be consulted. Just dip into it or read through diligently many times. Take note of this. Over with inestimable benefit, because each repetition reveals to the reader a new depth or a new horizon. Dhamma is like that. Don't think you already know. You already understood. Every time you listen, if it's spoken by somebody who has great wisdom, any level you can understand. And the more you cultivate, when your wisdom come to be, only then you can understand the deeper meaning of that speech or that sharing that is given. Only the cultivator will know. Then you will appreciate a lot more. Because wisdom is very funny. Before you have, you cannot see. You cannot understand what is spoken. It is the same words, same stanza. But different people with different wisdom, they receive it differently. Understand? Like in a class, you go to school. That's why I always tell people, don't blame the school and the student. They always say, because my father sent me to a lousy school, that's why I cannot be good. But the same school, you got brilliant student, you got not so brilliant, very weak student. Why? Everything depends on you. Understand? When your capacity is so small, you receive very little. Understand? I always like this analogy. I got one teacher, she always said, how much you receive depends on your cup. You know what is a cup? C-U-P. Huh? The cup that actually you have cultivated to receive the truth. If you only cultivate a little bit, your cup is very small. That is the amount you can receive. If you totally heedlessly don't cultivate, there is no cup. You have to use your hand. Oh, very difficult to receive. Understand? Even if it rain and pour, you don't get much. Understand? Provided you have this heedfulness, this very strong spiritual faculty, then your cup will be there. And make sure that cup is empty. Understand? Otherwise, it cannot go in. Full, overflow. Then you don't get the new one, the purified water. You get all the old, whatever that you already conditioned yourself to believe to be the Dhamma. Thus I have an open mind, a free mind, to reflect, contemplate. If it's the truth, investigate into it. It will stand up to investigation. Okay? Okay, we continue. That's why this opening statement is very good. You have to read through it many times. Each repetition reveals to the reader a new depth or a new horizon. In a book 10 times its length, one could not fully praise its value as a key to the understanding of human life. You see? You know why he say this word, human life? The Heart Sutta is very, very wonderful. There is this saying in the Mahayana. He said, when you understand the Heart Sutta, when you penetrate the perfect wisdom, means you realize the perfect emptiness, true emptiness. So there is a saying in Mandarin, Mahayana always use this quotation, famous, 真空妙有, means when you have realized true emptiness, then there is wonderful existence. Existence is human life. Life and existence. Existence and the human life become so meaningful until you will have this understanding to proclaim that life is really wonderful. A lot of living beings don't understand. They thought the Buddha only teach suffering. That's why they mistaken what the Buddha teach. He said, first noble truth, whenever I go, I ask, what is the first noble truth that the Buddha teach? Most of them will reply, life is suffering. Do you all believe what he said? No, the Buddha never said life is suffering. The Buddha said, there is a first noble truth that talk about dukkha. He never said life is suffering. He said there is a very powerful noble truth that describes to you what suffering is. But he never tell you life is suffering. Life is only suffering when you are deluded, when you don't have wisdom. That's why the first noble truth talks about the noble truth of suffering. The 8 conditions that can condition you into misery, sorrow, lamentation, fear, and bitter suffering. That is the first noble truth. Then the second noble truth is that whatever that gives rise to this suffering, there is a cause behind the second noble truth. The cause is your delusion that conditions your craving, your grasping to all these 5 aggregates of form and mind, which you deludedly cling on to and hold on to as real, as what you are. That's why Sakaya Ditti conditioned suffering. Then the third number two is the most beautiful. He said, suffering need not be. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible, he said. That's why he proclaimed the third number two, that talk about the cessation of all suffering, which is Nibbana. Can be realized in the here and the now, he said. Suffering need not be. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. There is a noble truth that talks about this ending of suffering, cessation of suffering. So this third noble truth gives us a lot of confidence. Tell us exactly what the Buddha wants you to understand. Life need not have suffering. Suffering need not be. Then he didn't only stop there. The Buddha is so wise. He knows you need a form of meditation to develop it. So he came out with the fourth noble truth. He said, there is a noble truth that talks about the path that leads to the cessation of all this suffering, which is namely the Noble Eightfold Path. He said, if you were to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the cessation of all suffering. So this is the beauty of his teaching. Then if you were to analyze this Noble Eightfold Path, you realize all the eight path factors, they have something to do with your life. That's why just now Master Chen Hua talked about the human life as a key to the understanding of human life. He said, in this book, 10 times its length, one could not fully praise its value as a key to the understanding of human life. So this human life is very important. You see, the Noble Eightfold Path got 8 power factor. Right view, what is right view? Right view regards to the law that governs life and existence, the truth and the reality. So when you have this right view, when you understand how the universe functions, when you understand the laws that govern life and existence, the nature's law, there are 5 great nature's law. You heard before? The Buddha called it Pancha Niyamas. The first two has a lot to do with scientific law. The first two is what the Buddha called Uttu Niyama, which is a physical law. All physical things follow this law. Uttu Niyama. You study a lot of this in physics and chemistry. Like water. This atmospheric pressure, if you were to heat it up, it will boil at 100 degrees Celsius. If you were to cool it down under this atmospheric pressure, it will become ice, 0 degrees Celsius. So these are the physical property of what they call all things in this universe, elements or whatever. That's why you have chemistry, physics manifesting the physical law. Scientists are very good in this. That's why they progress very fast. They understand this law that governs life and existence, the physical law of nature. Then after that, the medical science, the medical scientists, botany and all those things, those who study about life form, organic thing, the Buddha called it Bijaniyama, organic order. So this biological or organic order involves the human body, all of life forms, the plant, the animals, the fish, everything. He said this one all follow biological order. You cannot crossbreed a cat and a dog expect to get something else. No, that biological law doesn't allow. But you can crossbreed, let's say, a German goat or sheep with a Malaysian one. I have seen it done. So you can have this, you can breed similar species and so on. So there is this biological order. Then the medical science, the scientists are very good because they understand this, they progress very fast. So you see, science progress so fast because they understand the physical law and the biological law. Then the Buddha is even more wise. He said, not only these two laws cannot free your mind. You can be the most intelligent or powerful scientist. You only have knowledge, the Buddha said. You can explain a lot of things, do a lot of things, nuclear bomb, everything. But finally, you must die. Understand that? The first noble truth still afflicts you. That's why all these are called scientific law, or what they call materialistic law. Understand that? He said, what you need to understand is the spiritual law. The spiritual law that governs life and existence. When you have this spiritual understanding or wisdom, you need not die, he said. You need not suffer. That's why the other next 3 universal laws are very powerful. The Buddha said the third one is karma niyama. The first two is uttu niyama and bijja niyama. Physical law, biological law, order. Then the third one is law of karma. Karma niyama is it. This is a very powerful law. That's why he already defined. Each and every living being, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. Because living beings don't understand this law. That's why they become heedless. They never take care of their mind. They never train their mind. They never avoid all evil, do good. They entangle themselves with life through delusion. They suffer so much because they don't understand this law. That's why human life is very beautiful, wonderful existence when you understand this law. You know how to train your mind. Heed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. Keep the precepts. Then cultivate virtue, goodness, wisdom. Purify your mind. Then you have the noble life, happy life. Then you inherit all of this. That's why when you follow the advice of the Buddha, means all evil you must avoid. Sabba papasa akarana. Sabbe is all. Papasa is evil. Akarana. If you avoid all evil, no negative karma. That's why every life you come, you are beautiful. You are wonderful. This is the beauty of the teaching. And this law of karma is very powerful. Karma niyama. But the Buddha said, to understand the true meaning of the law of karma, you must understand the next spiritual law. Chitta niyama, is it? The order of the mind. Chitta is mind. The order of the mind, is it? When you understand this law, chitta niyama, you become so wise, is it? Because this will explain to you how your mind functions. The law of dependent origination is under this chitta niyama. The Four Noble Truths and all those things is under the next spiritual law. The Four Noble Truths is one of the Dhamma that the Buddha teach. So the next spiritual law that governs all life and existence are all the Dhamma that the Buddha teach. He called it Dhamma Niyama. So when you understand these three, like the scientist, you progress very fast in the spiritual field. That's why you can transcend birth and death. You can become so wise. You can become enlightened. You can become noble ones. In the here and the now is possible. So this Pancha Niyama is very powerful, very important. The whole universe, they are all governed by these five great laws. The great universal law. Or they call the order of nature. The five universal order. Pancha Niyamas. Okay. Now I go on. Now we are at second paragraph. At the core of this book is the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta itself. In English, a mere 16 sentences. See, the whole Heart Sutta is only 16 sentences. And a mere 262 characters in Chinese or Mandarin. The Heart Sutta, as it is called in brief, is nothing less than a summation of the wisdom of the Buddha. It distills perfectly the teaching of non-attachment or non-clinging or non-grasping. Understand? You can add in these two words. Sometimes the English word is very, very loose. The meaning is not deep enough. Non-attachment. What is your understanding? I don't attach. You think girlfriend, boyfriend. I don't attach. This attachment is different. It includes grasping, clinging to your views, your opinion, and all those things. Your five aggregate of form and mind. Which is the doctrine of emptiness. So now you understand the beauty of understanding this emptiness. Or sunyata in Pali. As the Venerable Master Xuan Hua said in his commentary, it is the heart in the heart within the heart. See? he scared you don't understand what the heart is. The heart is the essence, understand or? Our mind in Mandarin, the word heart, sing, is the same, understand or? So they always say, your heart, your mind, they are all one. But when you talk to the doctor, they say, no, the heart is the heart. That's why in Malay, they got two words, jantung and hati. You realize or not? One is the mind, one is the heart. Understand? But the heart is where the heartbeat is, understand? The seat of consciousness is. All of your knowing, all of your life force, everything arises from there. Understand? Because this form of mind is very peculiar. Karmically, it's conditioned out, then it pump there, it beat there. Understand? The life force, the karmic force, it come through there. That's why this heart can feel. The mind that feel, the emotion, the feeling, the awareness all come from here. Understand? So when you cultivate the Buddha Dhamma, you will start to understand. It is not the physical heart. It's the combination of this form and mind. When the form and mind develop the wisdom, the understanding, it connect. Then there is a gateway in your heart, it go in. That's where you realize your nature. Then you go beyond this form of mind. You go beyond the thinking mind. That's why you go beyond thought. That's how you can become awakened, enlightened. It is very complicated, not so easy. Unless you meditate, unless you really develop the wisdom, the cessation of form and mind, all those understanding that the Buddha Dhamma, the Buddha has taught us through his teaching. Then you will connect them all. Then you will cease your form and mind. Then you will realize what that nature is. Then you will know each and every one of us, we are all one, oneness. We have this eternal nature within, the Buddha nature. And the Buddha nature is very, very unique. You cannot talk about it, you cannot describe it. We only use word to try to share, to explain a little bit. Okay, before I go on, you got any question? I think I only have another 20 minutes or so. You got any question or not before I go further? So far, any question? You can ask. Yes, yeah, get the mic there. The wireless mic, because for the recording,
Brother Teo.
Yes.
This heart and mind.
Yes.
To my understanding, is the heart can be X-ray, the mind cannot.
The heart can be what?
X-ray. X-ray, that means you can see.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that is another way of looking at it. You can do the X-ray. Whatever the scientist can look at is the physical thing. But the mental consciousness is different. That's why science fail where the mind prevail. You know why science fail? They use the five physical senses. Whatever that they can experience or come to know through their senses, they say is real. They are limited by their five senses. Understand? That's why they must use scientific equipment to take X-ray, to use the microscope to magnify and all those things. Otherwise, they cannot see, they cannot confirm. Their scientists want proof. Understand? So like we understand science, there are certain sound or vibration, very high pitch. The dog, they can hear. They howl at night. We all say, why did the dog howl? Nothing. Because that high vibration they can hear. That impending nature's disaster, tsunami. Some of the fishes, some of the animals, they can sense it. Our human sense are so limited, understand? Unless you meditate, you cultivate. And then you can be like them. You can feel. Because when there is not so much thinking, you know what happened? When you are preoccupied with the thinking, your nature your awareness is not there. Understand? That's why human beings think a lot. What is the problem with living beings? They think a lot, they worry a lot. They are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so they never live, never aware, never sensitive. That's why you can be like the plant or like those some of these animals, very simple. They are most of the time with the heart, understand not? With their awareness within. That's why they can sense, they can feel much, much better than the normal human being that think a lot. Not only they think, they go and plan and scheme, become very cunning. How to win the war, how to deceive people, how to cheat people, how to take advantage of situations. This is what living beings do. Through their delusion, through their greed, hatred and delusion, their three evil roots, that condition their negative karma. That condition their suffering. So when you understand, you will know why. Anyway, it's quite good. What about your question? I haven't heard your question. Oh, you want to share that part? Very good. So, Li Hun just want to share with you. The heart you can x-ray. Like, scientifically, can be analyzed. But the mind, you have to train. That's why the mind, not so easy. Because it's nothing tangible. You cannot see, understand? Whereas external form, easier. You can see. That's why last time when I teach the five aggregate of form and mind, I haven't really teach you yet. 5-6 years ago when I started, I thought they need the Dhamma, I thought about very few people understand, hardly. If they can understand 10% of the time, they're very good already. I always tell them form is unreal, condition arising cause. They argue with me. Some of them, they take out the Abhidhamma. They say form, Rupa is one of the paramita. You know what is paramita? Ultimate truth. Why you say unreal? So when you have people like that who doesn't really go into the meditation and quote the text, it's difficult to explain. So I always tell them, because through your meditation you will understand all this. I say you have to understand. You must learn how to see form. External form. Whatever that comes to your mind. Okay? The external physical form. Through your seeing consciousness, your hearing, your smell, your taste, tactile or thought consciousness. If you cannot see form, you cannot see mind. You know why? Because form is so gross, so tangible. Understand not? If that also you cannot see, how can you see mind? Mind is so subtle, nothing, just an image here. Understand not? And it moves so fast through your sense door. That's why I said you must first learn how to see form. Then see the unreality of form. The condition arising, cause of phenomena. Then only you can see beyond form. Understand? When you see beyond this physical body, what do you see? When I don't identify with this physical body, what do I see? Means I know how to see beyond form, isn't it? Then we are no more different, isn't it? You no longer call me a Chinese, isn't it? A male, or a Buddhist and all those things, isn't it? Because you identify me through what? My external form. That's why human beings have so much problem. Because form gives them so much meaning. They cling and grasp to form because they identify through external appearances. That's why you got beautiful house, new car, old car. All this duality create a lot of argument, conflict. Male, female, Chinese, all the race come in, nationality, Malaysian. You identify through this form. If we don't identify through this form, where we know that this is only element, this is not what we are, understand not? We have another nature we did. So when you see beyond form, what do you see? What do you see? Not so different already. You have a mind, I have a mind. This mind got no male, no female, isn't it? No Chinese, no Malay, isn't it? We are nearer to each other, isn't it? Or they call one Malaysia. Then you don't identify with race. With all those things, isn't it? But then the mind still got a lot of division. Understand? That's why you must learn how to see mind. Mind, so easy. You have your views, you have your opinion. She have her view, she have her opinion. I can have mine. That's why the Buddha is very wise. Is it? Your truth, his truth, her truth, my truth, these are all relative truth according to what you think. But he teach the Dhamma, one aspect of truth. Understand? That's why he call it the noble truth. Arya Satya. Understand? Satya is truth. Noble truth. So noble truth don't belong to anybody. It was there before him. Understand? That's why truth is. The reality is. Nobody can monopolize the truth. Understand? Truth is already in the midst of nature, law of nature. That's why the Pancha Niyama. So when you understand that, then you realize, hey, if I were to look beyond form, I see the mind. You have a mind, she has a mind, I have a mind. Then no more gender division, no more race division, no more nationality division, no more whether I dress nicely, poorly, or whatever. The external identification that divides ceases to be. Correct or not? Then less problem, isn't it? But we still got our views and opinion. That's why mind can still create problem. You can still argue over two different views and opinion. You can talk politics, you can talk religion, you can talk anything, different view. So you have to learn to see beyond form, then beyond that mind. Once you see beyond that mind, what do you see? You see your true nature, Buddha nature. And then we are all one. When we are all one, there is he know you, he know me, then we don't argue, is it? We don't discriminate, is it? This is the profound wisdom that you will finally come to know. What you argue is only this form and mind, a bundle of memory with its views and opinion, through the senses, trying to argue among each other. This is delusion. Why do you do that? You create all of suffering through what? Trying to be right. Understand? Clinging onto your religious label, your belief, your race, your religion. That's why all this create disharmony. That's why you heard of racial disharmony, religious disharmony. Because these are the divisions created by form, understand? Form divide, words divide, everything divide, understand? But when you see things as they are, there is no word, understand? That's why it don't divide. When you see things as they are, means no label, no description, nothing. Thing is just the way it is. You cannot describe. Understand? You understand the reality of it. It is thus. That's why the Buddha said, thus I heard. Ananda always say, suchness. Thus have I heard. Suchness is very important. The Buddha is called the Tathagata. You know why? The Tathagata is the one who is expert in tatata. You know what is tatata? Tatata is suchness. Thus, suchness. That's why the Tathagata is an expert in suchness. That's why he knows the truth. He knows the reality. That's why he is the Tathagata. That's why Ananda never say, the Buddha say this, the Buddha say that. He said, thus have I heard. Thus, the Tathagata. So when you understand the beauty of the Buddha Dharma, you will come to know it is so beautiful. That's why you cannot see form. You cannot understand the unreality of form, the condition arising nature of form, and how form create division and suffering to so much, to so many people and living beings. Then you will not be able to see beyond form. That's why you are trapped in form. Everything becomes so real, so meaningful to you. That's why you grasp and cling. Even in the Huineng, the Platform Sutta. You remember the six patriarch, Huineng? The two monks were arguing over the flag and the wind. You remember? Then Huineng tell them, your mind move. Well, one monk was saying, the flag move, isn't it? The other one say, no, the wind. Without wind, flag cannot move. So who is right? Who is right? Who is right? Both also not right. Understand? That's why Huineng say,
your mind move. Without mind, how do you know there is a flag? How do you know there is a wind? Because they cannot understand form. They got this, what they call delusion. They still attached to form. They cannot see form. They cannot see the condition arising. Impermanent nature, empty nature of form. That's why they cannot see beyond form. Means flag and wind, a lot of meaning to them. Understand? That's why they argue over form. Understand not? Whereas Huineng go deeper. How do you come to know the flag and the wind? All through the mind. Understand not? That's why your mind is a forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything arises. He said your mind move. If your mind move, there is no wind. Understand not? No flag. Because you created it through your mind that identify. So that's why this is the second stage. It seems the sutta continue. There's another part to it. It doesn't finish there. Because you know from the famous poem that the six patriarch, the heart sutta, the platform sutta that Huineng actually shared. There is his senior, they call it Shen Xiu, his senior. Together they were at this fifth patriarch's monastery. Shen Xiu was supposed to be the chief disciple of the fifth patriarch at that time. He was supposed to take over the patriarchship. So the fifth patriarch asked them to come up with something to reflect their wisdom so that he can hand over the patriarchship. So what happened was, this Shen Xiu came out with a very good poem. He said, our body is like a bohi tree. Then the mind is like a mirror on a stand. He said, polish until it shines so that no dust can alight. So that was the poem he delivered. So the fifth patriarch said, very good. Everybody should contemplate, reflect, and cultivate this. This is actually the initial wisdom. Because this one talk about cultivation. He doesn't understand beyond mind. He was at the gate of enlightenment. He only need to understand that that is not the true mind, he will penetrate Shen Xiu. So because of that, Huineng was there. Huineng, they sent him to the, what they call kitchen, pounding rice. Then when he heard about all this, the famous poem, he said he want to go and have a look. Then he asked somebody to read for him. Then after he heard, he know, this Shen Xiu haven't breakthrough. Still trapped at mind, at the gateway of enlightenment, not enlightened yet. So he tell the other guy next to him, he said, I also got a poem to write. Can I write? That guy look at him. You are illiterate, you are in the kitchen, you are nothing. You are so junior. You also got something to write. Oh, he said, the Buddha Dharma don't really look at the high and low, understand? The truth is beyond measurement. Something like that. Then this guy said, okay, that's very good, I write for you, but remember, take me across if you really have the Dhamma. He said, no problem. So he wrote for Huineng the famous verse. He said, Hu Ti Peng Wu Su. Hu Ti is enlightenment. Enlightenment is not a tree. Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai, he said, the mind is neither the mirror bright nor the stand. That is the mundane mind. That is not the true mind. Then he said, Pen Lai Wu Yi Wu, He Chu Re Chen Ai. Originally, there was nothing, he said. Where can the dust alight? Because Huineng has gone beyond mind. That's why in that poem, he was so famous. Immediately when the fifth patriarch came to know, he said, rub it off. Because he's scared the people will go and kill him or harm him. But he went to the kitchen and told Huineng, how is the rice you have been pounding for so long? You know what was the reply? Huineng said, long ago ready, only need to be sieved. Then the fifth patriarch just knocked three times at the other end of the place where he pounded. And the story goes, he was given the patriarchship that night. Because fifth patriarch knew Huineng has penetrated the mind. He has gone beyond mind. He only need to understand what they call the mind-to-mind wisdom. They call it the patriarchship, the mind seal. That's how the six patriarch became so famous. So you see, six patriarch actually has gone beyond mind. Then why did he tell these two monks, your mind move? He actually has gone beyond mind. You know why? Because he knew this two monk is trapped in form. If you can't see form, you can't see mind. So the natural tendency is to use the wisdom to give them like a gongan, to ask them to reflect, your mind move. Then they will trace. Finally, it's the mind. When you understand like the Mahayana, 一切为心造, means everything is born of mind. Everything arises from the mind. Like the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. When you understand this, you are not deluded by form. Understand now? All of external form, external appearances, they arise because your mind arises. Understand now? So you can return all of this external form back to mind, then mind back to consciousness, consciousness back to the nature. This is how you come up, how you create, then this is how you return. When you return, all the form and mind cease to be. That's how you become enlightened. So this is how the teaching goes. So later on, it seems, after six patriarchs has passed away, there is a group of these monks. They were discussing this flag and the wind at one of the monasteries. And you know what happened? There's a lady who actually is enlightened already. She was the one who can read mind on. The Buddha talked about it too. Every time what the monk want to eat, he will know. Then he prepared. Very funny, very strange. The monk, how come this lady know what they want? Because she can read their mind. Then one day, as she was delivering all this, she overheard the monk discussing this, the flag and the wind, the six patriarch platform sutta. Then you know what she said. Where got mine? Just one word. One sentence, sorry. Where got mine? You know what happened? So many of the monks become enlightened. This is to explain to them, don't be trapped at mine. Understand? Just like Sensu. Don't stay at the mundane mind because you have cultivated, you can go beyond. When he say, where got mind? Like the nature, connect, awaken. That's why they all become enlightened. So what I'm trying to share with you is, she talked about the senses, the form, the heart, the scientists. The scientists only look at whatever your senses can perceive. Means all the external form, using your five fixed senses and your mind. So you don't know how to return the external form to mind, then you don't know how to understand who you are, what you are, the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why this form and mind, you must come to understand how they originated, how they come to be, and how they can return and cease. And through that, your wisdom become very different. You can really awaken to all this. Okay? Very good. That's why a very simple question give rise to some good condition. Okay, now we got 2 more minutes. Okay, you got any more question or not? If you don't have, then I just finish this paragraph. Then we can have a break. Okay. It is the heart in the heart within the heart. For more than 2 millennia, it has been recited daily in Buddhist monastery, convents, retreat, and household. In a practice which has continued to this day, and now grew again on every continent on the earth, the human being who has studied, memorized, recite, and treasured the Heart Sutta probably numbers in the billions. This one, not the human population, please. Include the non-human, otherwise cannot. So this one you have to understand. Include the non-humans. That's why he say has been. The Heart Sutta has been there for more than 2 millennia, because Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, when he realized this profound wisdom, Heart Sutta, long, long time ago. Okay? So we end, huh? You have any question or I can take one? Huh? You don't have? Okay. Take your break, huh? Then we come back in maybe 5 minutes time, huh? We will just pay homage to the Buddha and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Eh? Pay respect 3 times, then we start. Okay, just relax your body and mind, yeah? Then we can start. The second session is meditation. Huh? They call Vipassana meditation or insight meditation. Huh? Vipassana is a Pali word, huh? Like what I had just explained just now. We stands for the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self. The Pali words are anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. So these are very important universal characteristics. When you understand them, especially when you apply to the five aggregate of form and mind, you can become enlightened. That's why Vipassana is insight into the three universal characteristics. So you develop a meditation that gives rise to this wisdom that will allow you to insight into these universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self. That will arise the awakening or the enlightenment for you to realize the truth, for you to understand the Four Noble Truths, so that you will not deludedly grasp and cling to them. Then, through the understanding of the Heart Sutta, you will come to know that the five aggregate of form and mind are empty, or impermanent. If you grasp and cling, suffering will arise. Then, because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity, it's condition arising, causal phenomena, it come and it go. That's why it is empty. Yeah. Or the Buddha call it anatta. Anatta has two very deep meaning. One is not a permanent unchanging entity that you can grasp onto and hold on to, say this is me, this is I. And because of that, the sakkāya, the condition you to say, these things are mine. That's why you try to own and possess things. That is the wrong view. So when you have that wisdom, you will not do that anymore. So the deep meaning of anatta is, they call it sometimes non-self, not me, not I. Yeah. Nothing can be owned. They come and they go, condition arising, not a permanent unchanging entity where you can grasp onto and hold on to. That's why dependent on condition it arises, dependent on condition it ceases. That's why it's empty, it come and it go. That's why it's anatta, non-self, empty nature. Empty. Okay. Since most of us are here before, anybody who is new today to the meditation? Anybody? Oh, one. Okay. I will explain a little bit, so that you will know how to meditate. Okay. I have to brief you a bit, like I explained just now. The Buddha said, living beings, if they have not trained their mind to meditate, chances are they cannot have what they call calm and peaceful mind or a meditative mind. They have a lot of hindrance. You know what are hindrance, huh? The Buddha called it mental hindrance. The left hand side, the first five. Five mental hindrances, is it? These are the things that throughout the day trouble the living beings. Because they arise, it hinders their mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. That's why you need to train. You need to develop the five opposite, your spiritual faculty, to understand and to overcome the hindrance. Then only you can begin your meditation. Otherwise, not easy. Eh? Otherwise, you need to continuously train. Mm. So the five hindrances are sensual desire, ill will. These are what I explained just now. Your reaction to sense experience. Everything you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, tactile, feel, or think. If you react, if it's pleasant, you are drawn to it. They call it sensual desire. It attracts you. So your mind is being distracted, preoccupied with that sense experience, that sensation. That is the positive craving. That's why you are no longer in a meditative state. To see things as they are, you are no longer aware. You are lost in the emotion and the thought and the sense experience. Likewise, ill will also same. If you see something that you don't like or hear something that you don't like, you become angry, emotional, negative. So when you are like that, your mind is preoccupied with that. You are not peaceful anymore. You don't have the clarity of mind to be aware. That's why you cannot meditate. We are the hindrance of mind are there. The third one is sloth and torpor, or what they call sleepiness, lethargic mind, tired mind. If it's something you are doing without understanding, you don't have the interest, you feel sleepy, like you attend a class, a subject that don't interest you. So these are very similar. That's the reason why you cannot become successful in what you do. Because you don't develop the understanding and the importance of it. You don't have the passion because you don't see the importance of meditation. When you see the importance of meditation, the importance of why you must learn this meditation so that your mind can be different, so that it can transform you to make you a different living being or a human being, so that you can have the happy life, the good life, the peaceful life, so that you can be free from all suffering, all fear, worry, and anxiety, so that the meditative state will bring about the calmness, the peace, the understanding, and the wisdom to transform you totally. Personality-wise, character-wise, then through that wisdom, you become so peaceful, so different, so wonderful. Then you start to understand life clearly, appreciate every moment of life, then there is so much joy and meaning to life. That is the purpose of this meditation. So you see the importance of it, you will not feel sleepy. You will determine your faith, your virya, your spiritual zeal will grow. You will be very serious about life. Then the fourth one is restlessness. Like I explained, if you break your precepts, if you don't hold on to your moral rules, you entangle yourself with life problems. You know what are the problems of life, huh? You can have health problem, financial problem, relationship problem, career problem, or other life-related problems. So when you have those problems, you tend to arise the fear, the worry, the anxiety, and all these condition your restless mind. Your mind become like restless. You cannot calm yourself down. You have a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety because you did a lot of wrong thing. Like you cheat people, deceive people, or you harm people. Or you have this problem of life, like disease, sickness, separation from loved ones, death, and all those things. You cannot get what you want, So all this is the hindrance of mind that will create a lot of hindrance in you. The last one is doubt. When you don't know what you are doing, when you don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, you tend to make a lot of mistakes. You entangle yourself with life, and through the law of karma, you get into trouble for nothing. So knowing the importance of having this understanding to overcome doubt, that's why you come and study the Buddha Dharma and meditate. So this will be the driving force for you to develop the spiritual faculty, which I already explained. You must develop the faith, sadha, in the Buddha and his teaching. Then your spiritual zeal, virya, followed by mindfulness. Mindfulness is mind and body move as one. When your mind is silent, there is mindfulness. Means when there is this ability to synchronize your mind with your kaya movement, your bodily movement, like your breathing or your bowing, without thought, there is mindfulness. Then when you can place your awareness on your feeling without thought, there is mindfulness, mindfulness of feeling, vedana, nupassana. Then when you can place your awareness on your content of consciousness, that is also without thought, one of the ways to develop mindfulness or heedfulness. Then you can also be aware and mindful of the Dhamma, the teaching that the Buddha teach. That's why the four foundations of mindfulness are recommended by the Buddha. Kaya Nupassana, Vedana Nupassana, Chitta Nupassana, and Dhamma Nupassana. So, mindfulness will arise if you anchor to these four foundations and cultivate accordingly. Then mindfulness is very important. When you have trained your mind to be mindful, that is the beginning of meditation. Like I said, you can investigate the Dhamma, because the first factor of enlightenment is sati, mindfulness. Then you can use it to investigate the Dhamma, which is the second factor of enlightenment, Dhamma Vichaya. Then after that, the virya will come. When you investigate and realize the Buddha Dhamma is so beautiful, it can withstand, the truth will stand up to your investigation. Then you have a lot of faith. That's why your virya, your spiritual zeal become very strong. And then your mind transforms. You have the spiritual piti. Piti is the fourth enlightenment factor after virya. Virya is the third one. So when you have this spiritual joy, piti, your mind become very strong. Then you continue to stabilize it. It will become very quiet and accumulate into paucity or tranquility, very still. Now that is the fifth factor of enlightenment. Then when this stability of paucity become more and more stable, accumulate into what they call samadhi, the sixth factor of enlightenment. Samadhi is the unwavering mind, collected mind, very stable, very calm, and full of awareness within. Then through that, you can see things clearly. Sati and samadhi allow you to see things as they are, allow you to awaken to the truth and the reality. That's how you become wise. Wisdom will come to be. Then wisdom will bring about the final factor of enlightenment, equanimity, upeka. So when the seven factors of enlightenment fall into place, you can become enlightened quite easily. Okay? So the spiritual faculty of sati, very important. Then samadhi, like I explained, and wisdom will arise. So with this, I can give you instruction on how to meditate. How to train this mind to develop the meditation, the awareness within. I will use a multi combination of technique and method to train your mind. You can use any what they call meditation object that you are familiar to, or they call technique or skillful means to train your mind. Any method, any technique will do, as long as you have done it before and it helps you to stabilize this mind. Means anchor the mind to your object of meditation, then you can be in a state of relaxed awareness, silent within. That is what you need to do, the training of the mind. I will use the mind sweeping method together with the combination of metta or loving kindness. They are all in the notes. There is this photostat note, understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, email number 5. You read through, they are there. Then after that, when you have trained your mind, I will teach you how to meditate using the breath, like what the Buddha teach, anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. Okay, can someone help me to off the light? For those who know how to meditate, you can start straight away. You don't have to wait. For those who are new, who need instruction, I will give you the instruction now. Okay. You just relax your body and mind. Make sure your spinal cord is straight. Spinal cord check. Make sure it's straight. Then there are three points. Two in front, the buttock, like a tripod. You need to adjust this. Sometimes if the leg is too painful, pressure too strong, you lean back a bit, then it will relieve. Then if the buttock is too much pressure, you lean in front a bit, you spread out the weight. Then you close your eyes, then you relax your body and mind. You maintain attention at your forehead. Just feel, don't think, aware, feel your forehead. Relax every part within your forehead. Relax, relax, and relax. Then you move your attention to your eye muscle. Relax every part too. Then your facial muscle. Relax every part. Normally, most people who has not trained their mind, they find it so difficult to relax. They tend to have tension in their facial muscle. So to solve this problem, very easy. You just radiate a radiant smile. The moment you can smile, you are relaxed, because when you smile, there's a lot of joy. When there's a lot of joy, your muscle relax. When you are not happy, then it tense up. When you have problem, it tense up. So just radiate a radiant smile. Visualize yourself facing a mirror, then recite, "May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy." Feel the well-being and happiness within your form and mind, your entire being. Every cell of it, feel it well-being. Feel its well-being and happiness. Then after that, you continue to radiate metta to yourself. "May this body and mind of mine be free from all suffering, all physical and mental suffering. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be joy, may there be peace, may there be happiness all around. Then may my loved ones too be well and happy from the heart, radiate to them. Visualize them smiling. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and on trouble. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May there be peace, may there be joy, and may there be happiness all around." Then after that, you can radiate this love and metta to all beings within this vicinity. May all beings, known and unknown, seen and unseen, throughout the entire existence and within this vicinity, be well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your heart and radiate to them all. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they all too be free from all suffering too, all physical and mental suffering. May there be peace, may there be love, and may there be joy and happiness all around. Then you can relate to all your Dhamma friends who are here. May all our Dhamma friends to be well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness and radiate to them all. May they all to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be happiness all around. Then after that, you return to your facial muscle. Relax every part. Feel your neck relax, feel your shoulder relax, hand back to shoulder, then feel your heart. Your heart is a very important location. This is where your heartbeat is, the seat of consciousness. The life force arise and pass away. Silence your mind and just feel the heart. Relax every part. If you can feel the heartbeat, stay there. Or you can detect any vibration in any part, stay there. Silence your mind. anchor it there. Use that as an object of meditation if you can. For those who are new, you are still not sensitive and now you cannot feel your heartbeat, then you just relax the body and mind. Just relax your heart area, relax, relax and relax. Then you can move on to your stomach, feel it, relax. Then your abdomen, feel it, relax. Then your buttock, your leg, back to buttock, relax every part. Then you can reverse the whole thing, back. From your leg, you relax your buttock, abdomen, stomach, heart, you relax, feel. Then after that, you relax your shoulder, your hand, neck, facial muscle, eye muscle, and your forehead. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. Just relax, continue to relax. Then you try to maintain awareness at your nostril, the breathing. Breathe in, breathe out naturally. Then you just maintain awareness to feel at your breathing. Like the Buddha said, mindfully, breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware of the out-breath. So, mindfulness of the in and out-breath, the Buddha called it anapana sati. Anapana is in and out-breath. Sati is mindfulness. So you are mindful of the in and out-breath. Means the mind, the awareness, and the breath, they synchronize and move as one without thought. That is mindfulness. So you continue to train this mind. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Be patient, silently bring it back. If you are patient enough and you train, your mind will be trained. It will not become heedless. After a few times, it should settle down. There are a lot of people who used to say, expect the mind to wander off at least a million times. It's okay. Just patiently bring it back. If you are patient and sincere, you train this way, it will settle down. It will become very calm and very peaceful. Then you just continue to relax and allow this anapanasati to go on. Then breathing in, you are aware. Then later on, when it becomes more and more calm and more peaceful, you will experience what they call a spiritual joy that you call piti. When piti arises, you can recite this way, breathing in, experiencing piti. Breathing out, experiencing piti. Then this piti, if you continue to relax and stabilize, it will accumulate to sukha and pasati. Sukha is a very blissful state. If you don't cling, it will come to pass. Then it will become very tranquil, very still. They call it pasati, tranquility of mind. So when tranquility come about, you just silence your mind and use it to meditate. Use it to be aware of all the sense experience, everything that goes on within your sitting, your form and mind. You can experience everything that go on within your form, your tactile consciousness, your hearing consciousness, your thought consciousness, and all the senses that are active. You can just silence your mind and be aware. When you are aware, that is the beginning of what they call self-knowledge or the meditation. To understand who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being. How your thoughts come to be, how they condition each other, how through delusion it conditions you to grasp and cling, and how suffering comes about when you react to sense experience. All this you will come to witness them. Okay, I will let you continue with the meditation. Then it may be about 15 minutes time, I will ring the bell. Then we can have the second session. Then for those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Okay.
Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue your meditation. For those who have it now, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed. Whatever that you have developed that bring about the calmness, the peace, and the inner awareness is the training of the mind that you need to develop. This is the initial calm, the initial peace. And when you can make use of this to meditate, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, that is the heedfulness the Buddha talked about. When you have this heedfulness, or what they call Appamada, then you can meditate. So the Buddha is very clear. Heedfulness is the first quality of mind that you must develop. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die, the Buddha said, and the Dhammapada verse 21. Whereas the second part of the verse is, heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. The meaning is very important, because I understand Sister Lee want me to explain this. Some of you are still not so clear about heedlessness and heedfulness. You see, when you are heedful, means your mind is trained, you are ever mindful, you are always in a state of relaxed inner awareness, to be aware of what is going on in life. Your daily life, your daily activity, what you do, means you are fully aware. That is heedfulness. That is appamada. Whereas heedlessness is a person who is so heedless, they are not serious about life, they couldn't care less about life. They do what they like. Through their own delusion, they grasp at things, they hold on to things, they get angry, they become emotional, they become violent. That's why they keep on arising, all those like and dislike, all those emotional state, negative state. This is what the Buddha called the three evil roots. The meaning of this is very deep. The three evil roots are actually roots of all evil. That's why it's called the evil roots. They are the roots of all evil. The Buddha called them by three names. Lobha, dosa, and moha. The English translation is not that accurate. They only use the three words, greed, hatred, and delusion. When you have any of these state or evil roots in your mind, they will make you very evil. That's why it's called the root of all evil. Let's take the first evil root. Lobha. Lobha, the meaning is very deep. It's not only greediness. All of your selfishness is greed. All of your covetousness, your lust, your desire, your craving, positive, they are all your greed. Your deceitfulness, your intention to cheat, to deceive, and do all those negative things. So all this is part and parcel of the evil roots of greed or lobha. So the Buddha said, you have this, that it is an evil root. Means what? It makes you into a very evil person. Let's take for example, if you are selfish, you can cheat, you can deceive, you can harm, and you can take advantage of people. You can even kill and do a lot of nonsense. You can manipulate a lot of things. Not only the people, the country, the stock market, business dealing. So the greedy person can be very evil. Then you have the next evil root. The Buddha called it dosa. Dosa is a Pali word.
all your anger, your hatred, your emotion, your envy, your jealousy, your dislike, these are all part of this evil root of dosa, or ill will. All your unhappiness, your sorrow, your lamentation, these are part of your evil root of dosa. So the Buddha said, when you are very jealous, full of envy, full of jealousy, full of hatred, full of what they call negativity, you are very evil, because these are the evil roots of all evil. It turns you into a monster, evil person. And such a being is very dangerous, very, very dangerous. So that's why when you are angry, when you have a lot of envy and jealousy, you can hate, kill and harm. You will violate all your precepts. That's why it turns you into a monster, a very evil person. That's why never get angry, never raise your voice, because it's an evil root. Never become selfish, it's an evil root. Your karma will deteriorate. You will fall. That's why the three evil roots are very dangerous. You look at the whiteboard below. You cannot see maybe somebody on the light. Have to on the light. The three evil roots I have put under bracket down there. They are the root of all evil. So the root of all evil means if you have them in your heart, like your anger, your hatred, they can kill you and harm you. Understand? But they are very evil. So you have to root this out. How do you root it out? Like a lot of people, through their own anger and hatred, they hate their own loved one for so long because they blame them for not caring for them and all those things. And because it's an evil root, it makes you into such an evil person. That's why it's very evil. The Buddha also called it the three poison. If you keep them in your heart, it poisons you, it kills you. Spiritually, you are dead. That's why it's an evil root. It's the three poison, it's very dangerous. That's why you must root it out. They say, forgive and forget, you free yourself. Understand that? When you forgive somebody, you actually free your hatred. You no longer hate that person and angry at that person. So the evil root is gone. That's why when you forgive somebody, actually you free yourself. Just like karma, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good. When you forgive, you actually forgive yourself. That's why you're free. So the evil roots are very powerful. If you are not careful, they will condition your negative karma and evil roots. So meditation is to train our mind to be heedful, to be mindful, to see this evil root, to see this negative mental intention within us. Whenever you have selfishness, lust, covetousness, greed, envy, jealousy, emotion, negativity, deceitfulness, these are the evil roots. You have to arise the right effort to abandon them. These are the wrong thought that condition your unhappiness, your negative karma, your selfishness, your evil roots. These are all wrong thought. So when you have this in your mental intention, through mindfulness, through awareness, through heedfulness, after you have trained yourself in meditation, this is how you purify your thought and your mind. Arise the four right effort. The first right effort is to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen, the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion that has arisen. You have to abandon them. Then when you have the wisdom born of your ability to see them clearly, then they cannot arise, which means you can prevent them from arising. So the second right effort is to prevent this wrong thought, unwholesome thought from arising. First is, when they have arisen, right effort to abandon. Second, have the wisdom and the awareness, the clarity of mind, to prevent it from arising. Then the other two right effort is for the wholesome one. The right effort to arise the right thought, the wholesome thought, the thought of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, means thought of wisdom means follow Noble Eightfold Path, having right view to condition your right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. That is how you free your mind. That's how you become wholesome. That's how you avoid all evil, thereby following the first two advice of the Buddha. Then only you can silence your mind to meditate, to develop the more refined or higher wisdom. That will rid of the last one, delusion. The evil root of delusion. Delusion through sakayadhiti, the wrong view regard to this self or atta, is very powerful, very difficult to root out, to remove. That one you need to meditate. You need to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. You need to develop the five daily contemplation, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, all the Dhamma that the Buddha has taught and shared with us. So that part is very important. So delusion is not understanding the law that governs life and existence. You don't have the three right view with regards to the spiritual law. Means you don't have the right view with regards to the law of karma, the Four Noble Truths, the law of dependent origination, and all of the Dhamma that the Buddha has taught. So these are the important right views that you must have. When you have them, you are no longer deluded. You are no longer ignorant. So delusion is a very powerful evil root. They call moha. And the main one is sakayadhiti. Sakaya, wrong view with regards to the view. View is ditti. Kaya is body. Wrong view with regards to this form, this kaya. That's why it's called sakayadhiti, self-delusion. When you deludedly cling to this fire aggregate of form and mind, or the human being, thinking that it's you, you have delusion. So delusion, very easy to see. All your fear, worry, anxiety, and stupidity are your delusion. Because you don't understand the truth, the law that governs life and existence, the spiritual law. You don't have those right views. That's why you are deluded. That's why it conditions you to grasp and cling, to suffer. That's why you have fear, you have worry, you have anxiety, you have unhappiness. You react to so many things. You grasp onto so many things. So this is basically what you need to understand. Then the Buddha break down the teaching. He said to cultivate his teaching, you have to understand there are three very important things you must do. You must cultivate first dana, sila, and bhavana. You heard of this before or not? Heaven. You know what is dana or not? Dana in Pali. The English meaning is generosity. You must have generosity. You must have a generous heart. Without generosity, you don't have this good parami of generosity to pave the way for causes and conditions for you to cultivate the Dhamma. Because you need to have some form of wealth or well-being to meditate. So generosity bring about wealth, bring about condition for a good life, condition for wealth and money to be with you. So at least with that, you don't have to worry about your food and shelter. Then you can think of cultivating meditation, search for truth. That's why you must have dana, generosity. Then once you are there with the dana, with the support and the condition, if you are serious about life, you want to develop the teaching, you say, first, keep the precept. It is out of love and compassion for you that the Buddha advised you to keep the precepts. Precept is number one, for you to avoid all evil so that your karma is taken care of. Otherwise, if you violate this moral precept, it brings about a lot of suffering, negativity, following Dhammapada verse 1. Suffering will follow you like the wheel that follows the hood. Then after that, the third one is what they call bhavana. Bhavana is a Pali word. Sila is also a Pali word. Sila stands for morality, precepts. Bhavana is meditation or meditative training. So bhavana got two parts. That's why sometimes you heard the Noble Eightfold Path, they break into sila, samadhi, and panya. So samadhi and panya is actually the training of the mind to be collected, to be unwavering, to develop the wisdom. That's why meditation is actually samadhi and panya. The samadhi actually covers sati. So sati, samadhi, the last two. Then together with the right view, develops the wisdom. So wisdom is very powerful. So sila, samadhi, and panya is actually sila and bhavana. So bhavana is the meditative training. You must train your mind. You must train your mind to be ever mindful, heedful, to cultivate the meditation. Otherwise, you will be heedless. Then you will entangle yourself and you will create your own misery. You will suffer without knowing why you suffer. So this will summarize what you need to know. Then today, I think I don't have time for reporting. Normally, I will have time for reporting. What I will do is maybe next time, I cut short the Heart Sutta to 1.5 hours. So that meditation you can report, and you can have more time. Okay? Is that okay? I think better that way. Otherwise, every time I realize I don't have enough time to let you all report, then I cannot really explain. So with this, I think I will end today's session. We got 1 more minute. We will do the usual sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then we end. As suggested by somebody earlier on, we will include the what they call the recitation on invoking the righteous government, and also for the rain to fall at the appropriate season, and for all the what they call beings that live in this country to have good harvest, because in the olden days mainly agriculture, now maybe you can translate that as good well-being. Then the country will prosper. Okay, for those who have this book, you can refer to this book. We will do the usual sharing of merits. We are on page 68. Then the last one is on page 119. I will also translate the Pali chanting into English so that you all can understand. Sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit that they share this merit, and may they long protect the dispensation. Ita vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer of merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy. Then we turn to page 119. Okay. Okay, we shall recite this. This is to invoke the blessings for the country to have a good government, a righteous government, and for the well-being of our people and country. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hito cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be rich harvest. May the world prosper. And may the ruler and the government of the day be righteous. Then the last one is you make your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we pay homage to the Buddha, Kuan Yin, and all the blessed one. Then we end.